What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Squanch Wisecracks Rick and Morty podcast.
Show me what you got.
My name is Jared. I'm joined here with the other Squanchers. We got Ryan.
What's up, everybody?
And we got Alec.
Hey, how's it going?
So today we're covering Rick and Morty Season 4, Episode 4, Claw and Hoarder Special Rictums Morty. Usually I'm the one to guess what other people think before we reveal how we feel about the episode, but today I'd like to pawn that responsibility onto Alec. Alec, yeah, will you please guess as to what Ryan and I thought of this episode?
Jared, B minus, Ryan. Ryan's a little bit of a wild card. Ryan, B plus.
Okay. When do I reveal, Jared?
You go first.
A minus.
I was close.
A minus.
I like this episode a lot. I laughed my ass off. I thought this was probably my favorite of the season. The single, when the witch whips the dragon and yells, "Slut! Slut dragon!" That was, that killed me. I that was definitely the hardest I laughed all season. And yeah, this episode is great. Classic Rick and Morty. Just, you know, just trying to get a dragon, or just trying to tame a dragon, brah. You know? classic adventure. What did y'all think?
Wait, what did you guessed a B minus for me, Alec?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say you're about right. I would even maybe even say a C plus.
Oh, what?
This episode boils down to, do you find dragon sex jokes funny or not? Yes. And I don't.
The answer is so, yes to me. I do. I do absolutely.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. It's a taste thing. I didn't particularly find it too funny. So I was a lot of, huh, okay.
That was my criterion guessing, is how funny does Ryan think dragon sex jokes are?
And I
underestimated a little bit.
What about you, Alec?
I think a B plus. I thought it was funny. I like the dragon sex jokes, but I don't think it was my favorite of the season. I really liked the last episode a lot. And there wasn't a whole lot going on. I also really liked shitting on the fantasy genre.
Yeah. Well, there seemed to be something going on. The cat subplot in particular is bizarre.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. It's like an evil Garfield voiced by Matthew Broderick.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which, well, yeah, we'll get to that anyway.
Okay. All right. Well, let's just dive into a recap then. In exchange for braving prison to acquire the ultimate cube, Rick agrees to get Morty a dragon. After soul bonding with it, the dragon obeys Morty's every command, despite Morty not wanting to control anything. Meanwhile, a talking cat convinces Jerry to book a flight to Florida to party, but the reason as to why the cat can talk goes awkwardly unsaid. Initially annoyed by the dragon, Rick discovers that the dragon has some sweet stuff in his stash and likes to party. After a night of raging, Rick and the dragon soul bond. Having technically cheated on Morty, the dragon is slut-shamed and sentenced to be punished by his wizard keeper. But now that Rick and the dragon are soul bonded, they share all physical pain, and thus Rick, Morty, and Summer have to rescue the dragon. Using his magic dragon tome, Morty imbues Rick and Summer with magic powers and saves the dragon. Together with the rest of the excommunicated slut dragons, they band together and have a soul orgy so that they can kill the wizard, break Rick's soul bond, and be sluts freely. The dragon wants to continue kinky shit with Rick and Morty, but Morty denies any more sexual dragon activity and opts for a shower. Jerry and the cat get expelled from the Florida fun, so Rick picks them up and decides to scan the cat's brain to find out why he can talk. What they see is so horrific that they have to wipe Jerry's memory and let the cat go. In the post-credits, the cat and the dragon decide to bond. End of episode.
I missed the post-credits. I'm so dumb. It's also more or less the plot of Toy Story 4.
It's also the plot of Avatar.
Yeah, it's the plot of a lot of things, which is why I think it's kind of good.
I don't follow either of the references you guys just made.
Well, in Toy Story 4, you've got the, what do they call the misfit toys or the lost toys or whatever, who don't have human masters, and they're essentially promiscuous toys who like to play with a lot of different kids, except gotcha. It's more explicitly sexual.
Okay.
And in Avatar, they fucking soul bond with their dragons.
Oh, right.
I forgot there were dragons in Avatar. That's the last time.
They're not technically dragons. They're dragon-esque. What are they actually called? They're like more like wyverns or something.
They're dragons.
You're getting all taxonomy intents and purposes that I've never engaged with.
Yeah. So my first question is the whole joke here about how sexually explicit fantasy shows like Game of Thrones are, that you're more likely to see a pair of boobs in Game of Thrones than you are in Star Trek, that for some reason there's more sexuality infused in fantasy shows than in sci-fi shows? Is that what's being played around with here?
I think there's a telling joke, which I really liked. It's that Rick says to Morty, "You know who's into dragons? Nerds who won't admit they're Christian." And so I think it might... I don't
get that, by the way. I wrote that down. Explain that.
I also wrote that down. What does that dragon Christian joke mean?
I don't fully know, but I'm going to try to talk okay. through it. But I immediately thought of like C.S. Lewis, who's like a Christian fantasy writer. I don't know if there's dragons in C.S. Lewis, to be honest. But okay, so here's what I'm trying to think through, right? Is that I don't think it's trying to make a point about there being too many boobs in fantasy. I think what's trying to say is there's possibly kind of a subconscious eroticism going on with the way people really nerd out about it. I guess what they're trying to say is that people are subconsciously horny for dragons, but they're like repressed and possibly in this context, Christian, like too Christian to admit that they want to slut around with other dragons. That's what I'm going for. I would love anyone to write in. I don't really know enough fantasy to really substantiate that claim.
But the joke is the opposite. The joke is that it's, you know who's into dragons, Morty? Nerds who refuse to admit that they're Christian. So,
right. Like, because they refuse to admit it, they're repressing their desires.
Yeah, but so they refuse to admit that they're repressed because they're Christian, is what you're saying.
Yeah, like they want to be super horny for dragons, but because they're closet Christians, they can't admit that they're horny for dragons.
I don't, the horny for dragons thing doesn't make sense to me. I think it's more just that this is sci-fi does fantasy. This is the first time that Rick and Morty is explicitly kind of broken from the sci-fi thing, or at least has this juxtaposition between sci-fi elements and fantasy elements. And yeah, fantasy shows, whether it's Game of Thrones or even if you got, I mean, this is not a show, but if you're into the Kingkiller Chronicles, like there's something about fantasy that also extends to sexual fantasy. People want to see elf titties for some reason, in a way that for some reason they don't want to see Klingon titties.
Yeah, but they're not making a joke really about elf titties besides maybe like Summer's get up. It's about, and maybe the point isn't that people are horny for,
it's all these fantasy creatures that are all horned up.
Yeah. And I guess what I'm saying is maybe in the dragon lore where like, yeah, you bond with your dragon or, you know, I haven't seen How to Train Your Dragon or whatever.
I have.
There's no sex in that.
I know there's no sex in it. But what I'm saying is these are highly intelligent creatures that people like bond to for life. And, you know, that could get super sexual super fast. Maybe that's the only joke they're trying to make.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to my Avatar parody and because when that came out or after it came out, I remember lots of comedians or people making jokes about like how sexual that act of putting your ponytail into the dragon's tail or ass is, you know, and everyone kind of being like, oh, what the fuck is James Cameron trying to tell us? Are they fucking those dragons? Like, I remember that being like a thing. And then I think that they're literally that this is kind of what they're playing on with that episode is the idea of soul bonding with a dragon and then kind of how that's inherently sexual, kind of like in Twilight or whatever, you know, like when the wolf, the immortal wolf, soul bonds with, you know, the young girl, how weird and sexual that is. But it's kind of, oh, it's fantasy, so it makes sense, it's soul bonding, quote unquote. So I think that that's kind of what they were playing around with and riffing
on. I think you're probably right.
And there's one more possible way I want to fumble through the meaning of the Christian joke, which is that fantasy as a genre tends to deal in like good and evil, very stark lines of division, like the knight saving like the damsel in distress, all that stuff. Where sci-fi often deals with a lot of moral ambiguity and things like that. And so if you're sort of like a Christian who kind of likes those things, you might be drawn to fantasy. Or a closet Christian.
But why would they refuse to admit that they're Christian? I still don't get that.
Because they don't want to get made fun of for loving Jesus. And they're just going to quietly play the Jesus VR game and not tell anybody.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not a very big fan of that joke. Like,
It was a weird joke.
I mean, to me, you can be Christian and still like dragons. I don't really see why they are at odds with each other, but whatever. So the other thing going on here is that there's this thing with control. So at the beginning, the dragon tells Morty he will obey his every command, but Morty says, nobody is commanding anybody. I love flying through the skies as equals. And then towards the end, Morty says, listen, this is all my fault. This all started when I tried to control Bathalmar, and that's fucked up. Nobody should control anyone. And I guess this is also extended to how, you know, sexual liberation, that we shouldn't control people. If people want to have soul bond orgies with their grandpa and their sister and a bunch of other dragons, then fuck it.
Yeah, don't judge them for that.
Don't judge them for that.
Well, also, if you think about something like Game of Thrones, like, again, we're always told that dragons are super intelligent. And I get that Daenerys is the mother, but they're essentially adults who are still at the beck and call of their mother, like a weird kind of, it's a weird situation.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm into that.
I want to enter my lair and sleep upon my hoard until the age of man expires.
Yeah, and then Morty's like, well, let's split the difference. Let's talk about what Rick says to the dragon, or what the dragon says to Rick. He says, you're small for a dragon, Rick. And then Rick says, well, I sleep on an extra pile of extra big pile of awesome shit. I didn't really understand that. What is he just saying that my lab is awesome?
No, he's talking about like how the dragon was sleeping on all that cool gold stuff,
including a Duckman lunchbox.
Yeah, so I think he was just joking that he has his own lair somewhere, right?
Okay. Well, that's what I was thinking. That lair is his lab.
No, I think he probably just has something like his own Scrooge McDuck land of gold that's bigger than the dragons that we just haven't seen yet because he's Rick or something. That's kind of what
I'm sure he does. Yeah. And then the dragon says, then there will be sayings about you. Your lessons will hunt you down and you will be owned or slain. And then he says, that's why they call it a dying breed, brother. Anything else you guys want to bring up about the dragon?
We mentioned Avatar. We didn't mention the Hobbit dragon. You know, there's obviously some Hobbit dragon.
Yeah, I mean, dragons in fantasy, whether it's in the Hobbit or like John Gardner's Grendel, they always are sitting upon a stash of gold. And they, at least in Grendel, which is probably the gold sitting dragon that I'm most familiar with, he loves to just, he thinks that the purpose to life is to build a big old pile of gold and just sit on it.
Like Smaug, you know, Smaug.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Benedict Cumberbatch.
I definitely love the joke with the ectoplasm 1989
high C. Oh yeah, I've definitely seen those as a kid.
All that weird rare stuff. I mean, have you guys had that shit? The ectoplasm high C?
No.
It looked familiar, but my mom would never buy me that stuff.
I had friends in high school that like went on like a road trip because they heard one gas station had it, like, you know, 100 miles away from Ole Miss where they were going to school. And everyone went on to go get that stuff because they fucking like it was like legendary. So like when he pulled that up from the gold, I was like, yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know? Oh, see, I thought it was just some thing, just a regular Ghostbusters promotional high C item.
I mean, promotional high C item. You know, everyone loves that shit.
They're going to bring it back.
I didn't know it was a collector's item. Right?
Totally.
I don't think it's going to be as big as the Szechuan sauce. They don't make as big of a deal about it.
No. I mean, they just should. It'd be the right thing to do.
Yeah.
I wanted to say, well, okay, I don't have anything to say about dragons, but there's some fantasy stuff. Is that counted under dragons? And also dragon sex stuff. Is dragon sex stuff a separate category?
Please, let's hear more about dragon sex.
Go for it.
I just fucking love the line. Yeah, we like it down here because we can fuck woolly mammoths. And then they say something to him. And he's like, well, at least I'm not into shit play.
And the woolly mammoth that they show is so small compared to the dragons.
I love the scale of when, you know, the dragon that we've seen, like, that's way bigger than the Rick and Morty's house and stuff. And then it cuts to him, like, being tortured by the wizard, you know, when he's about to get killed. And there's another dragon that's, like, 20 times the size of it. Yeah. You know? So the scales were funny.
Yeah. All right. I think the probably more interesting topic to talk about, perhaps not to watch, but to talk about, is the cat. And the weird thing about this subplot is I feel like it's not as much of a B plot as it is like an E plot, in that it seems like there's just so much more screen time devoted to the dragon. And then the cat thing just seems to fly by, at least until the end, when it has that dedicated elongated scene where they try to figure out where it talks, why it talks. The cat tells Jerry, maybe you need to stop asking questions and start having fun. That's like the mantra that the cat is always saying. And then when Jerry questions, why going to Florida? And then the cat says, because they don't ask questions. They party and they have fun. And then when the cat is talking with some of the other partygoers, he's too critical of the sex positions that one of the men is talking about, and he's thrown off the boat for being an overthinker. So I think that this subplot is all about, does overthinking kill fun?
I think it interestingly parallels or mirror or puts a mirror up to the dragon plot, in that obviously if your kid riding a dragon would be dope, but Rick and Morty as a show is like, how would it actually not be dope or weird? They're overthinking fantasy and scrutinizing it in a way. And so whereas traditionally a dragon would just be like a call to adventure that would be really great, the cat is a call to adventure for Jerry. That the whole thing is he's not allowed to think about it and just has to chill with a talking cat who wants to go to Florida and get drunk.
Yeah, that's a great point, that soul bonding with a dragon sounds cool, but if you think about it, it could be pretty fucked up.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it really comes down to that first, like when we're introduced to the cat talking, because it's introduced just like it's set up just like any other Rick and Morty plot, like, oh, this insane, this absurd thing. But the way Rick and Morty talks about it, it just seems like another day in their life, and we accept it, you know, oh, a talking dragon, that's what this episode's going to be about. But the moment that Rick goes, no, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, what, talking cat, I have nothing to do with that, then you kind of are like thinking like, oh yeah, that is weird. And then they play it so straight about how we don't know why the fuck it's happening, but we just got to accept it like any other thing. And they kind of play into how our suspension of disbelief basically is what it's about.
Yeah, totally. Talking dragon, normal fantasy. Talking sure. cat, what?
What the fuck?
Exactly.
This might be a stretch, but do you think there's kind of like a commentary on, not necessarily Rick and Morty fans, but fans in general, who some of them might be agitating for the, why does everything have to be so like X, Y, or Z, and are essentially like imploring the creators to make a like unthinking, like the TV equivalent of going to Florida and playing volleyball?
Yeah, I think that there's probably something there. I mean, well, do you guys think that there is any element of overthinking killing fun sometimes?
I think overthinking things is fun. I don't know. This is why people hate me. No, I don't know.
That's literally what Wisecrack's all about, is overthinking shit.
Yeah, I guess I've done pretty well.
Yeah, but I mean, there is a line that sometimes we don't cross. So, for example, like one of my favorite filmmakers is David Lynch. And I think that depending on what you're trying to do, I don't really overthink David Lynch films because it would ruin the fun for me. But having said that, I will enjoy reading essays of people trying to figure it out, mm-hmm. depending on the mood that I'm in. But I do think that there are some things that are meant to just be experienced on a visceral level and not thought about, because I think there is a distinction between kind of that initial sensory experience and the intellectual experience. But that's not to mean that one is bad and one is good. I think you just have to be an informed viewer and know when you're doing one and when you're doing the other, and when it's appropriate to do one and appropriate to do the other.
Amen, Jared. That was very well said.
Yeah.
Tiny tangent. I worked with a assistant director over the weekend that worked with David Lynch, and he said that when he asked David Lynch what Mulholland Drive, like what the fuck was it about? And David Lynch said, well, see, Mulholland Drive runs parallel to Sunset Boulevard, but you've heard of the movie Sunset Boulevard, right? But there's more twists and turns. That's what it's about. I'm like, what the fuck? What kind of an explanation is that? I guess it makes sense.
He's just trolling. All day, all his movies are just dreams. And once you overthink the dream
collapses.
Stops being effective. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I think that there's a balance there. I mean, what we do is we do overthink, but you know, there's a time and a place for it.
Totally. Yeah. You can't. Oh, yeah. You got to just let yourself loose, baby, and have some fun every once in a while. Don't use your big old noggin, even if you got it. Just smoke your just smoke your vape pen at 7:30 in the morning and have a good time.
And then so at the end, the cat, when threatened with getting his brain scanned, he says, "Brain scan, you're overthinking it. The point of a talking cat is to have fun." And then Rick says, "I find the insinuation that I can't ask questions and have fun condescending." And then the cat says, "Okay, I'm from outer space. Happy?" And they say, "No." And the cat says, "Yeah, because no answer would be satisfying." And I do think there's some wisdom that the cat has here, but it's an interesting thing. So yes, in many cases, let's take the movie Mulholland Drive, for example, there really is no answer to what that movie is about that would be satisfying. However, trying to theorize what it is about is part of the fun. And the fact that there is no answer and that you are incentivized to dig deep into the movie and dig deep into the recesses of your brain to try and piece it together, that's part of the fun. But I think that in order to maintain that fun, the artist has to withhold any kind of definitive meaning so that the mystery can be upheld. That's why Kubrick would never talk about what 2001 is about. That's why whenever anyone asks David Lynch what it's about, he trolls them.
J.J. Abrams has his mystery box. He doesn't want you to look inside it.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about how, whereas the mystery of something like The Shining or 2001 Space Odyssey might drive people to interpret it lots of different ways and be fun, mystery box shows, especially by J.J. Abrams, usually fall on their face because I didn't watch Lost, but I guess all the reveals were deeply disappointing because, like, knowing where the cat is from will never be satisfying when you make a TV show over, like, you know, dozens and dozens of hours that just kind of answers things. It'll never be satisfying. And I think that's kind of what happened to Westworld season 2, which kind of had a similar thing going on. I think it's kind of everywhere now. And I kind of think people are going to get sick of it. I don't know.
I'm not a big fan of mystery box shows. To me, there's a difference. If the whole show is deliberately making you ask the question and dangling this mystery in front of you, and the only reason you're continuing to watch is to find out what the mystery is, then it's annoying if they don't tell you. But with something like Twin Peaks, I'm going to go back to David Lynch, the reason you're watching is not to find out what's going on. Mm-hmm. It's because it seduces you. It lulls you into a mental state. It's like watching a screensaver that makes you feel high, but a much more...
has a story, kind of.
Yeah, but a much more artistic one and a much more engrossing one. At least that's why I watch it. So when people say, "Oh, the end of Twin Peaks season 3 doesn't make any sense," I'm like, missing the point, man.
I hope that's like one of the endorsements on the backs of the back of the Blu-ray box is a screensaver that makes you feel high. Jared Bauer, Wisecrack.
Twin Peaks season 3 episode 8, best thing on television in decades. Which Ryan, by the way, piece of trivia about Ryan, Twin Peaks is his favorite show of all time. It's his favorite show of all time, but he hasn't seen season 3 yet, which is my favorite thing ever.
I'm wearing a Black Lodge shirt right now.
Oh my God. You don't even understand what that symbol means.
Shut up. Shut the fuck up. I do too.
All right. Let's go into some good joke.
I haven't had 10 hours to sit down and give it my undivided attention yet in the last 3 years.
Oh, it's more than that.
Okay?
It's more than that, baby. It's like 17 episodes, man.
Okay, 17 hours then. Whatever.
All right. I got a question. Yeah. What does the Taylor Swift fist pumping in the air when Morty is summoning the dragon, what does that mean? That was another joke
no
I did
fucking
not
idea.
Get.
I have no... Please, lots of people helped us with the last episode, emailing us the joke we missed, jokes we missed. No clue.
Wait, what don't you get about that joke?
What does it have to do with him summoning a dragon?
That's just a funny imagery. I don't know. I don't think there's any point to it.
Does he accidentally summon Taylor Swift? Or like, does Rick do that?
No, but Taylor Swift doesn't show up. No. It's just some image. And what does that do with fist pumping? I really don't get it.
it's just out of place in fantasy land. You know, it's a fish out of water joke.
Did you guys notice when the wizard comes out? he's like watching, he comes out when I think Rick arrives, and he's watching like wizard porn. So it's like a woman in a bikini with a wizard hat on. So he, yeah.
No, I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
Me neither.
He was also being a pervert. Anyway.
The one thing I do like about this episode is more animation gags. This is kind of the highlight of the season for me in a lot of ways. Rick using his magic cannon, turning things into birds, then eggs, flower vases, turning things into chickens. I love those just quick split-second gags that are really visually creative.
I like when he when they got all the animals in the zoo fucked up. The dragon.
Yeah. with Future playing in the background. Yeah. So good. So I don't watch the show Bones. I don't know what the show Bones is, but it was turned into ass. Can you guys clarify that for me?
Never seen Bones.
I think it's a guy named Bones who studies bones. Oh, yeah, yeah. So it's
now it's a
it's David Boreanaz, I think, and he is a anthropology and forensic anthropology and forensic archaeology. His name is not Bones. Never mind. Oh, wait, no. There's an anthropologist named Dr. Temperance Bones Brennan. So the idea is that they study bones. Their nickname is Bones. In this case, they study asses and ass crimes, and their name is Ass.
All right. Cool. Bones. I probably would have thought that was funny if I knew much about Bones.
I laughed a lot, and I didn't know it was about Bones, really.
Yeah.
Well, at first.
This episode definitely had, I don't want to call it juvenile humor because I love juvenile humor, but definitely much more like explicit humor. There were no jokes that were, unless I'm just too stupid to get the Taylor Swift joke. There were no jokes like the, in the previous episode, the Catherine Alpha through Omega Joneses, the ones that require two steps of thinking. Maybe this Taylor Swift one requires 12 steps of thinking and I'm just not getting it. But a lot of this just seemed to be like, is it funny to say that dragons eat ass, yes or no?
The answer is yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Classic Rick and Morty adventure.
It is definitely that. You know, the other thing about this episode that I was a little disappointed in is that in the other episodes, everything kind of boiled down to a single beat in Rick and Morty's relationship. I talked about this last time, whether it's just Rick misses Morty, Rick wants Morty to spend more time with him, or something like that. This one didn't really seem to develop any relationships between Rick and Morty or Jerry and Morty or Jerry and Rick.
They were in a love triangle. Something. They were caught in a heated love triangle between them two and their dragon, and they cheated on each other.
Well, also a love. What is the shape of 10? Is it a dodecahedron? A love something. in the Phoenix orgy thing. So that's going to be weird. Oh, yeah. Forever. And I hope they never talk about it ever again.
Okay, yeah. So you're saying that Rick or Morty is jealous of Rick. I guess that's it. Just Morty's jealous of Rick. Is that some? I don't know. Like it was. They did such a good job earlier with transitioning from the end of season 3 to season 4. It's like Rick is re-entering the family. And so he comes to appreciate the family in episode 2. He misses Morty in episode 3. And in episode two and then in episode three, he makes sure that they can go on adventures together because I may be getting those mixed up. I don't have it in front of me, but basically there was development in Rick's relation to the family. This jealousy thing seems a little bit out of left field, but maybe I'm missing something.
I thought it was a funny premise for the episode because I was laughing when it was a classic premise of guy and girl are in or guy and dragon, you know, and he's in like a pretty demanding relationship or controlling relationship. And then the dragon just, you know, gets drunk and fucked up with Rick and they hook up one night. And then what are the problems that are going to arise from that? You know, the dynamic in the relationship. I thought it was a kind of clever way to have a funny love triangle drama episode.
I will say this is kind of to your point, Jared, and kind of my thought about the season overall is that last season was a lot more serialized. This one, they even announced that would be kind of less serialized. But there's still some like development happening overall. But I think as a season, there's not a ton of it happening. Like I wish there was a little bit more. And I think as a season, it kind of makes it not as great as it could be.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the more Ryan is talking, maybe I'm starting to think that the point of the episode is that Morty wants to get something out of the adventures with Rick, because now there's this whole thing going through this season where Morty is now being more assertive. He's standing up for himself. Mm-hmm. And now he's saying, all right, I'm only going to brave jail and get you your stupid purple cube if you do something for me. And even when Rick does do something for him, get him a dragon, Rick still figures out how to ruin it for him.
Yeah.
So maybe that's it. All right. That's all I've got. Mm-hmm. You guys want to go into the mailbag?
Let's sure. do it, baby.
Let's do it. All right. We got something from Alex on the heist episode.
Well, how do people leave us a voicemail, Jared? Please tell
us. Oh, sorry. If you want to leave us a voicemail, 213-534-8807 or 21-ELF-HUT-07. That's where the elves party. The elves
that are
probably all fucking. That's right.
Hey, Wisecrack. This is Alex. I'm a long-time listener, huge fan of your show. I want to talk about Rick and Morty Season 4, Episode 3. I guess we could call it the heist episode. And Jared on the podcast was talking about if there are any recent movies that this episode is riffing on. I wouldn't say that there are, that the episode is riffing on any one movie in particular, but this episode, as I was watching it, reminded me a lot of Dan Harmon's rant about this movie called Now You See Me that he had on his podcast a couple of years ago. And you could search it on YouTube right now. Just like the little sections where he talks about how crazy and ridiculous the movie is. And if you don't know, Now You See Me is a movie about magicians who pull off this crazy heist to try and become a part of this secret order. And there's twists and turns here and there. And the movie is constantly winking at how smart it is and how it's outwitting other characters in the movie. And it's worth a watch. It's just worth watching alone just to see how crazy it is. And especially Dan Harmon's rant. And yeah, so it's funny because even Dan Harmon says, if I was writing a sequel, I would call it Now You Don't, you know, as an example. Anyway, I love what you guys do. Keep up the great work. Thanks.
Yeah, I talk
a little piece. No, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I totally had heard that rant before we did the podcast, and it just never crossed my mind even during the podcast or the episode, but he's totally right. And we got some emails about that too. So thanks everyone.
Yeah, I've heard about this rant, but I have not actually listened to it, but I have seen the movie. Have you guys seen the movie?
Yeah, I actually like that movie. It is ridiculous, but I dig it.
Oh man, I thought it was abysmal.
I mean, it's a funny, engaging heist movie, but yes, it is totally pedestrian film, I guess.
Before Wisecrack, I would do these 60-second movie reviews for NPR, and so I actually got like a pass to see that movie early, and I had to sum up my views on the movie in 60 seconds, and it was tough because I was like, man, this movie is dumb. I hate it, but other people might like it, and I'm trying to review this for a general audience.
How did I never know this?
I don't know. I guess we just never talked about it.
Were you on air on NPR?
No. I would just submit the written couple of sentences and someone else would read it.
Gotcha. I want to dig those up. See a budding film critic, Jared Bauer, in action.
I never really actually even heard them read. I just was told that they were. So I don't even know if they cited my name. Anyway, let's go on to this next one. We got one from Seth.
Oh, wait.
Anyway, crack, this is...
Wait, go ahead, Ryan.
I was just going to say, you know, we were talking about the references in the in that episode, the heist episode, and we got a ton of emails telling us that the son of a bitch line was from Predator, so we totally missed that.
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about. Predator a heist film?
What'd you say, Jared?
Predator a heist film? It's not.
No, but it is. There is that moment where they meet after not seeing each other for years and years, and they go, "You son of a bitch!" And then they have that big epic handshake. That's the meme around the internet.
Right. Yeah. Also importantly, yeah, the meme on the internet of like the really bulging bicep in the red shirt and the bulging bicep in the that is like a painting of that scene. It looks like.
Right. Right.
Okay. Cool. Haven't seen Predator in many years, but
Yeah. Cool. Hey, Wisecrack, this is Seth. I'm calling about the Squanch. The recent episode I just listened to was you guys discussing the one crew over the Cuckoo's Nest or Cuckoo's Morty. And there's one specific heist movie that was referenced in it that I'm curious why that you guys either did you catch or didn't mention. But there's a part during the scene where Rick and Morty are trying to gain entry into Heist Con, where Rick references Morty as being his getaway driver with Asperger's, which is a reference to
Baby Driver.
It cracked me up. I thought it was really funny. I just wanted to mention that in case it was something that nobody else on the podcast caught. I just thought that was really funny. Thanks for doing your show. I'm a big fan. Peace.
Good catch, man.
I've not seen Baby Driver.
Yeah, he's spot on. That's totally what it's about. And for one, you got to see that, Jared. You haven't seen an Edgar Wright movie that's out? What the fuck's wrong with you?
Dude, don't even talk to me about what's wrong with you, Mr. Twin Peaks.
It's not 17 hours fucking long, all right?
Doesn't matter. It's your favorite show. It's your favorite show.
I can't wait to watch it, though. You are sleeping on Baby Driver.
Yeah, but I mean, look, Edgar Wright is good. I'm not an Edgar Wright fan.
I thought we were on the same page.
I mean, I like him, but I mean, it's not my favorite shit ever.
I can't wait to watch Twin Peaks season 3 at some point.
Yeah, I mean, look, I respect that you have something to look forward to. You know what I'm saying?
In life.
I've exhausted all of the joy in my life.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've seen it twice, and I'm just biding my time. Sometimes I think about rewatching it, and I'm like, you know what? No, it's too soon.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I need to just abuse my brain more so that I'll forget, and so that after maybe another year or two, it'll be fresh. Well, it's enough of a reason to buy a new sound system, maybe get a new TV. I don't know.
Please let me know when that moment arises, because maybe your third time might be my first time and we can share that together.
Okay. We'll make it a ritual. Yeah. All right. We got one about Old Man in the Seat.
Hey guys, just want to say long time listener, first time calling in. Little cliche, I know, whatever. I'm calling in about the Old Man in the Seat. I wanted you guys to know that the end credit scene with Jerry on that, he is, when he's rumbling through the fridge for something to eat, that's a direct scene-for-scene shot of Stanley's cameo in the 2008 Hulk movie starring Edward Norton. Didn't know if you guys caught that or if I missed someone commenting on it or not, but thought it was a little bit of a fun tidbit. Thanks.
Very specific.
Awesome.
Have you guys seen that movie?
I have, but I have no fucking recollection of what he's talking about.
Wait, this is the Edward Norton Hulk movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I saw the other one with that other guy, Eric something.
Eric Bana. The Ang Lee movie.
That's the only one I've seen too. But the shot of the camera being inside the refrigerator and someone opening it up is in a lot of things. So I don't know. I mean, maybe he's right. Maybe there's something more specific that it's referencing, but if that's all he's referring to, I think it's probably more universal than that.
Right. I agree.
All right. Let's just go into the mailbag. You can hit us up with emails at squanch@wisecrack.co. Alec, what do we got?
All right. First one, we got an email from Patrick, Patrick MD. This Patrick is a doctor, everyone. So, hey, Wisecrack, I'm actually reaching out today because after listening to last episode's breakdown of the heist episode, there's two pieces of film Americana I think you missed. The first is at the end of the episode where Rick and Heistatron are going back and forth about who's outsmarted the other. I programmed you to believe that. It was a direct callback to the 1983 movie War Games. In the movie, a young Matthew Broderick, Alec note here, Matthew Broderick plays the voice of the cat in this episode. Anyway, in the movie, a young Matthew Broderick in a high school hacker gamer is a high school hacker gamer who hacks into NORAD in search of computer games to play and happens upon a game called Global Thermonuclear War. What he doesn't know is the computer system actually controls the U.S. nuclear arsenal, and the computer can't tell the difference between a game and real life. Long story short, the U.S. gets down to DEFCON 1 and a real nuclear strike is imminent, but Broderick teaches the computer that in playing these games there are no winners or losers, therefore there is no point in playing. Rick and Morty even borrows two direct quotes from the movie. When Morty asks Mr. Poopy Butthole, what is he doing? And he responds, he's learning. In the end, both Heistatron and NORAD computer Joshua both conclude, quote, the only winning move is not to play. This goes right along with Rick's feelings that the whole concept of heist movies are pointless and it's best not to do them at all. Completely random, I know, but Rick and Morty are good for that. The second one is the You Son of a Bitch I'm In, which we got many emails for. Thank you, everyone, including Patrick. Yeah.
No, I haven't. I've seen the trailer many times. I feel like they play it at the Draft House a lot.
And the game that they're playing, I believe, is Tic-Tac-Toe. I want to say, like in the movie, the supercomputer is going through every variation of playing tic-tac-toe and trying to find the one winning one. And then obviously that's a hard game to always win or figure out a way to win, or you can't. And then or maybe it was chess. I don't know. Either way,
tic-tac-toe doesn't seem terribly complex. Chess makes more sense.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I think actually maybe it was both at some point in the movie. But yeah, that I love war games. Definitely go see that if you haven't seen it, everybody.
The next one is an email from Elaine who wanted to remind us in the Morty Mind Blowers episode, Rick says, yeah, it really makes you think, huh, Morty? We should never take things for granted, which is a joke. And so Elaine points out Rick misuses the word irreverent in the heist episode when they're grave robbing, essentially. So maybe it's another joke about Rick misusing words. We got that from a couple people too.
But with the granite thing, they call him out on it. I mean, I can kind of buy that. What do you think?
Maybe, but that's the other thing, is like people constantly say it's a phrase that people say wrong all the time, right? People say take it for granted, not granted. But do people use irreverent wrong all the time, or mispronounce it, or mispronounce another thing too irreverent?
Not that I know of.
Yeah,
me neither.
Maybe
I still maintain that I still maintain that it might be a mistake.
Yeah. Sorry.
Dan Harmon doesn't make mistakes.
Yeah, Jared, you're canceled. So the next email
Just a joke that doesn't land.
Yeah, that's fine. The next email is from Mario, who says, hey, Squanchers, my name is Mario. Mario's from Colombia. Just wanted to mention an essay by Umberto Eco titled Edmond Dantes, where Eco explores the reveal as a trope in literature and how it can be used intelligently or taken to the absurd and vulgar. He refers mainly to reveals known to the reader, but not to the characters. But I think the whole twist trope in heist movies can be viewed from a similar perspective. I don't know if the writers of Rick and Morty hate heist films, but there seems to be a criticism of the trope as the centerpiece of these kinds of movies, so that instead of pathos and character development, the screenwriters can just resort to cheap tool of the twist, providing us with a quick endorphin shot, completely devoid of meaning, that some people misinterpret as good storytelling. In the episode, this is taken to its logical conclusion, a series of reveals one after the other that take all the thrill away and just seems so convoluted and lazy that nobody can follow the story or be invested in anymore. Just Rick and Morty writers taking a big dump on the laziness of exploiting one trope as though it were a sign of clever storytelling. Mario.
Oh, cool. Did he add what book that's in? I read Travels in Hyperreality recently.
The essay is called I Am Edmond Dantes, and I'm going to Google it right now.
The Cult of the Imperfect?
I'm not sure.
Wait, no. Whatever.
This might take more Googling.
Yeah, whatever. All right, we're going to go and wrap it up. Where can people find you on the internet, Twin Peaks poser Ryan?
You son of a bitch, Jared. You can find me on the internet at Ryan's Game Show on YouTube. I get people to come to my garage and we play a little game for $20. Sponsored by Ramen Noodles. I'd go there if you want to see some of my stuff. Thank you, Jared.
And for a couple of the episodes, I recorded the sound. And that That was what, 7 years ago now?
No, it was probably 5 or 6. But, and I remember you coming up to me afterwards and like being like, did you guys plan all that or something? Remember? you didn't really know that what we were doing fully, I feel like.
But no, I probably just showed up.
Yeah, but I think it was funny. I forgot that you did that. That was fun.
All right, Alec, what about you?
I'm on Twitter at WisecrackAlec.
Cool. All right, guys, we will see you next week for the season finale of, or the season half finale of Rick and Morty season 4.
Yeah, I'm excited. This has been a good season. I like it.
Me too. All right, guys, as always,
wubba lubba dub dub.
Peace.
Peace out.